On today's podcast, we meet Don Scott, Chief Commercial Officer of PowerRoll, a highly innovative flexible solar panel engineering and manufacturing firm. Don describes a career shift from information technology towards a focus on innovating in the energy transition. PowerRoll are on the cusp of scale commercialization of their extremely light, flexible, thin film, highly customizable solar panel technology. Lightweight, flexible solutions for solar open up an exciting array of transportation, agricultural, car park, and commercial industrial applications. Intended for ultra-local manufacturing globally, PowerRoll cites greenfield production facility costs of less than one-tenth of silicon panel production, driving the lowest levelized cost of energy in solar solutions globally. I'd like to welcome Don Scott from PowerRoll to today's podcast. Thank you so much for joining me, Don.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
It is a pleasure. So we met talking about your company's flexible solar panels, flexible solar capabilities, and I really wanted to have you on the podcast to talk about the technology and how you came to this company, and maybe you could even just give us your bio, your background of how you got to PowerRoll.
Sure. I'm the chief commercial officer, so I wasn't the chief scientist. I'll give you his story because it's quite interesting as well. But I joined the business about 2 years ago as we started to reach the point of scale up and commercialization. But my bio, as you can tell by my accent, although I live outside of London, I'm originally from California, originally from the Bay Area. And I moved over to the UK 26 years ago. I spent most of my career in IT, enterprise IT, working mostly with large corporates. And as I reached, IT has changed a lot, and I was changing with it or not maybe, but I reached a point where I wanted to make a shift in my career. And I've been really interested in understanding what the IT industry was going to do in taking all that creativity and innovation and starting to direct it at the climate challenge. And to be honest, I wasn't seeing a lot of that kind of redirection. So, but I definitely wanted to do something in green tech. And then I happened to be approached by this company, PowerRoll. They're based up in the Northeast near Newcastle here in the UK. And they have this really cool tech to make solar films super, super cheap. And it wasn't a hard sell for me to join.
That's great. And so tell us a little bit about the history behind the technology that you guys are deploying.
Okay, great. So our chief scientist, a gentleman named John Topping, came up with the original idea of our microgroove architecture about 10 years ago. And he had a background working for the UK Ministry of Defense and had moved from doing work for them, which I don't really know what it was. He can't tell me official secrets and all that. But he moved from that point into working at Oxford University in vacuum coating technology, which is basically using plasma to coat plastic with metal film. And it's used a lot in the food packaging industry, because if you open your crisps or your potato chip packets, you'll see the silver lining. That's a very thin aluminium vacuum coated lining that's put in to keep the product fresh, right? So it's a technology that's used in many, many different industries. And he was working in that field. And he came up with the idea of saying, well, look, if I could take some of the work I was doing with shapes and structures at the MOD and combine it with what I'm doing here with vacuum coating and metals, and really at a very small kind of micrometer level, I could create a platform for two-terminal electrical devices. That was the original idea. A solar panel is basically a two-terminal electrical device. So he came up with the architecture, and then the application followed not too long after, but it was this combination of shapes and using vacuum coating in a roll-to-roll film processing production method to get a very, very cheap two-terminal electrical device, which is what we have with our solar film.
So when we talk about flexible solar panels, let's get really tangible. What does this feel and look like? What do we mean by that?
Well, the base substrate that we use is a product called polyethylene Theraphate. I always get the last word wrong. PET film, basically. It's 150 microns in thick. So that's, you know, a micron is a thousandth of a millimeter. So it's very, very thin. And that's the base substrate. So we emboss our grooves into that PET substrate. And we do the vacuum coating and a few other things, which we can talk about. And then we will put some additional protective barriers over the top and the bottom. But you'll end up with something that we estimate will be, it'll definitely be sub 3 millimeters in thickness. So very, very flexible in its kind of base format. Very lightweight because of that. We're using standard polymer films. And yeah, so it will be a very, very thin, very lightweight, very flexible. But with the photovoltaic energy generating capability built in. So it's a nice combination of function and form, we think.
And did you tell me it has the same connectors as other standard kind of glass-based solar panels?
It will. At the end of the day, you know, all of the technologies, whether it's silicon panels or other flexible products, you know, it's all just about creating DC energy. And we'll be doing the same thing. We have one unique capability in that because of the way our pattern is constructed, it's quite flexible in terms of the kind of voltage ranges that we can adapt to. So we can build products that are actually specifically designed for different voltages. But at the end of the day, yes, you'll get two wires, positive and negative terminal, and you can plug them into your, you know, whatever you're using it for, your battery or your grid access or, you know, whatever it is that you need to charge. So very common.
In terms of almost density per square foot, is there a differential between the things that are available in the market right now and being deployed at scale, say in the United States and other locations versus these flexible panels? Is there a difference in the per square foot of your panel? What kind of solar energy you're able to extract and utilize?
Yeah, there is. The industry uses the acronym PCE or power conversion efficiency to standardize a measure that panels can compare each other to in terms of their efficiency. So it's how much energy per square meter can a solar PV product produce. Now, if you look at the top end silicon products in the market today that you see on rooftops and solar farms, those are 21, 22, some of them a little higher, pushing to a 23% PCE. They take 23% of the sun's energy and they're able to convert that into electricity. We, in our minimum viable product, which we are working on scaling up now, so this is the very first level of market and commercial viability, we expect to be at 10% PCE. So let's say it's about half the efficiency of a silicon panel, but we never intended to make the most efficient silicon panel or the efficient solar panel. We intended to make the cheapest solar panel. So even if we're half as efficient, if we're a quarter the cost, that's still going to be a winner, right? So when you look at our what's called the levelized cost of energy, we still expect, even at that 10% PCE, to be the lowest cost solar product, well, certainly that we know of.
That's fantastic. Okay, yeah. So the lowest LCOE of any solar product globally.
Any solar product, yes.
That we're aware of. Okay. Yes. And I assume, even though it's half as efficient as a comparable silicon panel, you also have the potential to put it on more surfaces because of its flexibility, right? So you could cover more square footage in a given area.
With the
panels. Okay.
If you looked at the, I'll give you a couple of markets that we think are very interesting. If you looked at the commercial and industrial roof space, and I live in the UK, so we use examples here, which are a little more UK centric, but I think in most developed countries, it's probably fairly consistent. You know, only 2% of the south facing rooftops here in the UK currently have silicon panels on them. There are problems with cost, there's problems with engineering suitability, but at the end of the day, for silicon being around as long as it has and the prices coming down over the last 10 years as much as they have, there's still very little penetration in that space. And if you think about it, let's take an Amazon warehouse as an example. You know, you've got thousands of meters of roof surface sitting there. The space is not a problem. Their problem is, can they find a product that can not only be costed in from a purchase perspective, but also integrate into that roof structure in a way that is, you know, sensitive to the building architecture, you know, doesn't create a whole lot of new engineering and weight up on the surface. So that, you know, these markets are still relatively untapped when you think about the potential scale for PV in the commercial and industrial roof space. And we've done some modeling to say if we could take that 2%, turn it to 5%, you know, we could make a very significant dent in the UK's energy needs, right? Which is great right now, especially with everything going on. So huge potential in the commercial industrial space. And then on the other side of the coin, you think about agritech, right? Farmers out in the fields, they're using a lot of new systems, LED lighting. They're doing a lot of water pumping. They're doing a lot of air circulation, quality management, using new technologies and new systems. They all require power. That's another great application where the farmer's not space constrained. He's got loads of space. What he needs is a product that's flexible, that he can take with him, put, you know, attach a solar panel to a pump, move the water where he needs it for that day, pack it up, move it somewhere else the next day. And something that would integrate into lightweight farm buildings, you know, potentially the sides of greenhouses or other structures that's, you know, designed sympathetically for those kinds of buildings. So what I say to people is, where space isn't a premium, again, we're going to be the winner because we will be the low cost alternative. If space is a premium, like in the residential market where you only have a certain amount of square footage on your roof space, you might still go for silicon. And we understand that you want to get maximum efficiency out of that space. And in the utility sector also, because they are driven by maximum production per square meter, we probably see that as something we might look at, you know, further down the road, but not in our early introduction. So looking for those places where space is not a premium is our goal.
So what about the news out of France in the last couple of days, the parking lots?
Parking lots, yeah, that's a great use case for us, isn't it? Have you seen, and I'm sure everybody will have seen the silicon panels that are going over car parks. And I saw a lot of them when I was on a trip to the States recently. But it's a great use case because it does two functions, right? It helps protect your car from the sun and the environmentals, and it generates energy while you're there. Now, the thing you'll notice about what they're doing today is they're putting in massive pilings and these huge steel, you know, and you think about the carbon footprint of the infrastructure going in to support those panels. I mean, it's rather crazy. So if we could come in with something that's lighter weight, easier to deploy, but that's such a great use case because in the future, you can see people taking their battery powered cars to the train station or to their work, plugging it into, you know, a very lightweight, low cost, aesthetically interesting solar generating panel or array, work going into work and then coming home and taking that energy home with them, right? So that it's a great use case. We have long dwell time, train stations, workplaces and whatnot. We think our product has got real promise for those applications. It'll be great.
So, solar energy is in such a strong growth mode right now. Can you tell us about your planned expansion projects?
Absolutely, absolutely. So once we had, I have to go back and tell a little bit more of the history of the company because we did a lot of research on small prototyping machines. And we proved the architecture works up to 11% PCE, which was a real achievement for the business. Now that was at small scale and it was done on kind of a bench or a sheet format. And in order to drive the costs down, we really need to replicate what we did in the prototyping environment to full scale roll-to-roll manufacturing. which is quite a it's quite a it's quite a hill to climb. It's not a trivial exercise to take something that you can do in a lab and scale that for production. But we've built a pilot plant. We've moved in. We've got all the equipment that we need there to do the, all of the four stages of the manufacturing process to generate solar film. And we, yeah, and so we're working through that stage of it now, which is how can you get consistent quality, consistent yields, output, and working to build that efficiency back up to where we had it in the lab on the large scale machines. And then eventually, following the milestones which we'll be achieving over the course of the end of this year and early next year, the next step is to move into proper commercial manufacturing, right? Where a manufacturing facility has been designed with the intent of producing this product. So the machines are engineered to do what we need them to do. Ultimately, we want to license our technology out to third parties around the world. We think that's the greatest opportunity to achieve scale, which the world needs right now. But in order to bridge the gap between even our pilot plant and full-scale commercial production, we're exploring the idea of building a what would initially be a rather modest but a proper commercial line here in the UK, and being a part of that journey as power roles so that we can ensure we've de-risked the entire process for our licensee partners. But ultimately, we want other companies to pick up our tech and be able to manufacture their own solar film in their own countries for their own markets.
So for non-experts in the space, right, the implication is that you can almost manufacture these panels in the type of facility that could manufacture food packaging.
Exactly.
You know, current needs for food packaging, and it literally can be done around the globe. So you could really, really source locally for this solar capability effectively all around the world with not a huge complexity, as long exactly. as they license the technology, right?
Exactly. Yes. I've talked to a number of companies. We have four process steps that we use. We emboss the film, which is exactly the same process as your credit card, the little dove on your Visa card, or the holograms on current banknotes. So we do the embossing, we do a vacuum coating, the crisp packet machine. We then do a printing to put the solar absorber into the grooves, and then we do a lamination to protect that material. So there's four stages. I've talked to companies that have done anywhere from one to all four of those stages for a different application. So when I talk about vacuum coating, I say, yes, I know vacuum coating. So yes, we're hopeful that we can find companies that have an interest and an appetite to take their expertise in some of these manufacturing processes, but also just the general, how do you produce a lot of stuff at scale consistently with good quality? Because that's a real science in itself. So they can take our IP and combine it with their core competencies and their know-how and help them to move into new markets, help their what markets they represent to take advantage of this low-cost solar film. And, you know, we'll continue to work on improving the technology, improving the efficiency, that kind of thing. So, yeah, because, you know, what we're doing is so innovative and the costs that we expect to get to are so disruptive to the current market, almost every meeting I have ends up with a, can I get my hands on some? And we're not doing that yet for a couple of reasons. We still need to get the pilot plant producing enough film at the right efficiency. And we're still working with different encapsulation processes to protect it and make it durable. We don't want to give people film because we've done something that ends up being an inferior process. They look at it and think, well, that didn't work very well. So we've been a little protective. But yeah, we everybody that I speak to would like to have a POC, and we look forward to being able to support more of that external activity. Probably, I would say Q2, Q3 next year, we'll be in a position to, you know, find a few really cool key application examples that we could partner on and, you know, get some real world usage. So we're excited to do that, though. It's, yeah, I'm chomping at the bit.
Can you share with us what are some of the challenges around flexible solar or just the business of Power Roll? Like, walk us through maybe some of the hurdles you've worked through around the technology and the business plan.
Yeah, sure. So we're working with the idea that we're working with is absolutely unique. I mean, John Topping has come up with an absolutely new way to use the film with the embossing and the vacuum coating and all things I mentioned to create a two-term electrical device. And then we're using a perovskite solar absorber, which I don't know if you're familiar with perovskites. I'll get onto that in a second, but first with the grooves. Working with a novel architecture as we are, it then becomes reliant on Power Roll to solve all the problems because nobody's ever done this before. So every little challenge that we face, there's not a lot of external companies or researchers out there that have cracked it. So we have to solve every problem ourselves. And we have 8 or 9 PhDs on our payroll, and we're only a company of 35. So that's quite PhD heavy. We have a great team, and they are, but we have to solve every problem, and that can slow you down because if you hit a bump, you have to fix it. And the other thing, which has been, I wouldn't say a challenge, but we're working with this material called perovskites, which is it's a fantastic story because perovskite, it's a naturally occurring crystal. It makes up 80% of the Earth's mantle. It's abundant, right? It's just very, very deep underground. But scientists have found that this crystal structure is really, really good at absorbing the light and creating the electron flow that you want to generate energy. And in the last 10 years, perovskite development has gone from, very small efficiency to actually, one of the best in the industry now. So really positive story there. There's a couple of challenges with perovskites, though, and their stability and they do have a small amount of lead in them. So one of the other challenges we face is because we're not perovskite developers, we want to be the best platform for perovskites with our microgroup technology. But we're having to work with not only our novel architecture, but also keeping pace with all of the great research that's going on around perovskites. So we're taking a novel platform and we're putting a novel solar absorber in there. And it's a new world. But like I said, we've proven we can do it. So it's not a question of can we. It's the only question we have to answer now is can we do it at scale and can we do it at the low cost objective that we hit. But it has been a journey. So yeah.
Now dialing out to more the macro environment for a minute, I want to get your views on something that I think is quite topical in the renewables space right now.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm sure you followed closely the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act announcement and the very profound implications that has on deployment of renewables in the United
right.
States, which I know it's only one country that you'd be looking at around the world, but obviously a pretty big one in terms of deployment at speed of renewables.
Yeah.
And then we'll note some discussions in Canada and the EU, sort of how these subsidies are being put in place in different countries and should we coordinate or should, are we competing with each other in terms of how we subsidize and how
right.
the industrial implications of the national subsidization plans in these different regions. What's your view at Power Roll around subsidization and the best systems for subsidizing yeah. or the implications for how you deploy in different regions of the world of subsidies?
That actually is a very topical question, as you know, but because the emphasis is on we know now from Russia, from what's happening in Ukraine, that supply of energy, imported energy, carries a risk, and you have to really look at where you're getting it from and the security of that supply if you're reliant on it. And I can only speak to PV, and I can really only speak to the manufacturing side of it, right? But we've kind of slowly walked into a very similar situation today, where all these countries are investing heavily in creating not only green tech, clean tech, but secure tech from a geopolitical perspective. And solar could play such a huge role in that. It's crazy. But the problem we have is we've slowly walked into a situation where China has cornered predominantly China, but Asia in general, predominantly China, have really cornered the supply chain for silicon, for the ingots, for the modules, for the cells. And in order, you know, if you wanted to create a solar industry in America, you know, a 1 gigawatt facility, a facility that's able to produce 1 gigawatt of energy generating capability a year using silicon, that's going to be probably, we estimate, about 500 million just to build the plant before you've sold your first panel. So it's not a trivial and it's not a cheap exercise. And this is where I think new technology like PowerRoll can really make a difference in getting us out of that trap. Because a factory to produce a gigawatt of our solar film, we estimate to cost between 30 at the low end and 50 million at the high end. And that's if you're starting from scratch, if you don't have any existing machinery that you might be able to leverage. So it's an order of magnitude cheaper. And it is the innovation and technology that's driving that. So I think we love the investments that are going on. We're excited about being able to participate in that once we get out into the commercialized, you know, once we move through this last stage of development, we're actually moving into the market. Because, you know, we could unlock that aspiration for those countries in a way that exists, you know, the silicon never will. You just can't compete with China because they'll subsidize the energy and they'll subsidize the labor. They cornered that. That game's over. So if you could come in with new technology, you could produce at high volume with a low energy input, low labor relative to, that could be a platform where you could make a big difference in your domestic energy security, a big difference in your energy or your carbon, how much carbon you're putting in the atmosphere. And there are those, I'm only speaking for PowerRoll, but we know we're in the industry and we know that there's a lot of new and interesting tech that I think will, if we could direct those investments to these innovations, then we have the opportunity to not only achieve the objective, but to do it in ways that are almost accelerating the benefit, if you know what I mean.
With everybody producing locally.
Ultimately. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So the greenest possible solution, right? The greenest and most nationalistically palatable solution, right?
Exactly. We have a few, following that thread, we have a few partners today, and I've spoken to many, many companies around the world about our proposition. And, you know, the climate and the industries and the applications in India, we know are going to be much, much different than the U.S., And that the U.S. is going to be much, much different than the U.K. The amount of sunlight, the amount of surface area. We have a partner in Japan who's expressed to us the interest in our product because Japan is such a mountainous country. They don't have those large fields to put in utility solar. So each country has their own unique requirements and their own unique environment that they work in. And one of the things I think is also very cool about our tech is that, you know, our domestic manufacturing partners can design the final product using our technology to really tailor a product to meet those different regional or domestic applications, right? Whether it's agriculture or an industry, whether they want a panel that's 30 meters long or one that's 3 meters long, whether they want a panel that's 300 volts or 50 volts, you know, our technology can adapt to a lot of different use cases. So we can help people customize the products to fit their particular markets. That's
which is far less the case with silicon panels, right? I mean, they tend to be standardized. But
you go to the solar shows, and I found this very funny when I joined the industry. But you go to the solar shows, and every silicon panel you'll see, it's about 1 meter wide, it's about 2 meters tall. They're all made of glass. They've all got aluminium edging, you know, slightly different design, slightly different technology. But it's amazing how little physical innovation has gone on. They're all about 40 volts. They really are. It's a very, very standardized industry for as long as it's been around. It's amazing how little they've done.
What does the LCOE, or levelized cost of energy, that you're referring to for the 10% PCE or 10 or 11% PCE out of Power Rolls products, what is the ultimate price per kilowatt hour that that unfoods?
5 cents.
5 cents USD?
Five US cents.
Okay, 5 US cents. That's really interesting. So we looked a little bit at the economics of your systems, or how do you think your customers really look at ROI in systems like this? Is it LCOE, basically levelized cost of energy, is the main focus, but also square footage and kind of that trade-off?
It will be, yeah, because energy is a commodity. So if we can hit our aspiration, our ambition to deliver energy at the cheapest price, we think the finance directors will certainly like us. Beyond that, because our product is so lightweight and flexible, we can actually unlock a lot of markets that are just not suitable for silicon because of its. You think about the mobile, the transport, right? E-transport. We're not going to generate enough energy to power a Tesla, at least not in the first couple of years. But we could integrate our product very sympathetically into the top of a large truck, right? An HGV, heavy goods vehicle. And we could cover the top of the trailer with solar film, and we could direct the energy into the cab so that when the driver's not moving, he can continue to run the air conditioning or the heater and listen to the radio instead of idling his truck to achieve that objective. There's also a company here in the UK who's actually created a solar-powered refrigeration pack so that the cargo is refrigerated but using solar technology. And our film, and we've spoken to those companies, and they're very excited about what we're doing, because our film, it just integrates into those use cases so much better, because it doesn't add a lot of weight, doesn't add additional rigidity. It's not a heavy engineering peel, stick, power, done. So in those use cases, we can actually enable PV to be used in ways that really just weren't possible before. They either weren't possible or they certainly weren't cost effective, because the other lightweight products are just super expensive.
So are there certain pockets of the world where you think actually this is the most, I mean, aside from specific use cases, are there certain countries where you think this is really where it's going to explode?
Yeah, I do. I think if we can end up hitting our objective of being low cost, we will have a sizable market opportunity just about anywhere we go. But that said, I know from talking to our partners in India and other companies in places like Turkey, you know, there are countries out there in the world where they get a vast amount of sunshine, but they didn't have any natural carbon resources to take advantage of through the course of the last 100 years. So they're carbon poor, but sun rich. And, you know, they end up in a situation, even as we go through this transition, where they have to import a lot of the fuel, a lot of the energy they need for their domestic markets. And in those places, I think we can have a really sizable impact in helping them do the two things that I think really have to be core to this transition strategy. One is to get off of carbon and onto green energy, but also to improve our quality of life for the people that use these technologies, right? Make people's lives. We don't need to go back 100 years to living in dark caves. We should be living in a world that's light abundant because we have these kind of technologies. So I think those countries have a particular added benefit to what we're doing because they're so reliant on imported fuels today and have been for all this time.
So are there particular resources that Power Roll is looking for right now, such as hiring of people, raising of capital, business development, new facility space anywhere in the world that you hope somebody who's listening to this podcast might reach out to you about?
All of those things.
All of those things. You're hiring, you're raising capital.
Yes. Well, you know, we're 35 people mostly based up near Newcastle in the UK. But as we reach our milestones in our scale up journey and tangibly prove that solar film can be made at scale with the quality, with the efficiency, at the cost that we're looking at. You know, considering all the things we talked about in the current state of the situation around the world, we're going to need money. We're going to need people. I'm really interested in companies that have any of the four competencies, competency in manufacturing, particularly film manufacturing. I'm still looking for partners that might want to talk about this being a product that they could use to diversify their own portfolios where in their domestic markets. So yeah, we will be going into a scale-up fundraising round, probably starting in end of Q1, I think is what's being targeted. And that's to build out some of that manufacturing capability to do that first commercial plant and a few other things that we need to do. So we need money, but ultimately, once we've proven this, I think we're going to enter the tornado and hopefully move through that very, very quickly. It'll be game on.
That sounds very exciting. So how can people reach out to you at PowerRoll to learn more about you and your company and the technology?
So two ways, I'd say. One is if they're just interested in keeping pace with what we're doing and maybe they would like to use our product when it becomes commercially available, please go to our website. They can register for our newsletter and we put out a quarterly newsletter to let everybody know how we're getting on. But if they have an immediate interest, a business interest in working with us at whatever level, then they can contact me directly, don.scott@powerroll.solar. So we're PowerRoll, two R's, two L's, .solar is our URL. And I invite people to go to our website because there's a lot of information about microgrooves and, you know, how we do what we do. And there's visuals and some videos and things that people can see. It's quite hard to describe verbally. So if you're interested in what I've shared on this podcast, powerroll.solar, have a look. There's loads of stuff there. I think people would get a good idea of what we're doing from that.
That's superb. Thanks for joining me today, Don. I appreciate it. And we will be tracking your progress at PowerRoll.
Well, thank you very much. It's been great talking to you.